So, I think it's a pretty good sign when you're getting emails from both sides of a particular debate, as if all debates have two sides, telling you how wrong you are. I mean, it's not always that being in the middle is always the right place to be, but sometimes it's a definite sign that you might be on the right track, and I think here might be one of those cases. Talk about it in a minute, though. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam. Joining me, as usual, is the lovely Becky. How are you?
I'm doing great, Sam.
And Bridget, how are you?
I'm good.
Fantastic. So, like I said, we get a lot of... every time we talk about the Pope, and it's been a while since we've talked about the Pope at this point. Do you remember the last time...
I'm not sure the last time we talked about the Pope on Ask an Atheist, but it's a perennial, you know, discussion to be had because, you know, we have things like the religious directives governing what medical care can be given at publicly funded Catholic hospitals in the United States.
Yeah.
We have things like Catholic schools discriminating against kids being able to wear a tux to their prom just because she wants to. We have things like this all the time that, you know, the Pope could, you know, take a hand in.
Alrighty, so this email comes to us from James from Chandler, Arizona, who writes, "You can't be any more objective or rational about the Pope than Hannity can be about Obama. From listening to your almost weekly bashing of him, it is obvious that unless he completely denounces the Catholic Church and Christianity, anything he says or does isn't going to be enough. If he saves 50 people, you'll attack him for not saving 51. If he proposes a positive policy, you'll attack him for all the bad policies still in place." Okay. Well, I'm going to stop here. I'm going to go for it. I really love these opening. You can really tell the flavor of an email when it says, when it gives, you're just like Hannity and Obama. It's like, that's clearly just designed to get at me, that there's no there's zero informational content
about
the nature of my arguments there.
Is it getting at you, Sam? Is it weighing on you? Is it weighing on you that hard?
No, when I see something that obvious, it's like, oh, that's just crap. I can throw that out. I could easily just have edited that sentence out and made this guy look better by doing so, frankly.
But he intended that to be there, so go for it.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I want to make people look better than they are.
Yeah.
You know. I am tired of the lame, he's the Pope, he can change church policy with a single sentence. In reality, he is the head of a gigantic bureaucratic organization that was set up before the Middle Ages. There are real limits to his powers when dealing with secular matters. To keep saying he can change whatever policy or have the Catholic organization change direction merely on his say-so is really disconnected from reality. That argument sounds kind of oddly familiar, actually, given that we've made it several times on the show.
Well, it also contends that to say so is really disconnected from what church policy thinks and espouses. I mean, the Pope is supposedly infallible, and whatever he says goes. We have, though, seen this weird sort of backpedaling going on with Pope Francis and his lower representatives, and says, "Oh no! Let me interpret for you, the media, what the Pope actually meant when he said that. Who am I to judge whether atheists can go to heaven or not?"
Right. I mean, there is the concept of papal infallibility, but oddly enough, in the documentation on papal infallibility, they had limits to it.
Yeah.
Oddly enough. So it's infallibility asterisk. You know, there's a lot of fine print on that one.
So he can't change church policy with one sweeping motion, one sweeping decree. But do you think that it would go a long way in doing so? Do you think it would go a long way in the Pope saying something like, "Hey, you know what? We believe that families are meant for having children and there should be one man and one woman in a family. But we understand that there are other kinds of families and you should maybe use condoms to prevent the spread of HIV. I mean, when we're lauding the Pope for one sweeping sentence or one sweeping motion about caring for our environment.
Yeah.
And then to say, well, why should he even bother being held accountable for anything he says because he can't change anything?
Well,
no, clearly he can.
I don't want to get into Advanced Bishoprics and Dragons second edition here. This isn't the show for that, and frankly, I find it incredibly droll. But I know more about the hierarchy of the Catholic Church than I sometimes let on, because things that scare me are things that I research so that they aren't scary anymore, the Catholic Church being among them. Going on, Mostly when you start to discuss the Pope and the Catholic Church, I ponder if the reason you were going negative is because you want contrition for its own sake, or that you don't want to admit that your original prediction that Pope Francis was going to be exactly like the last Pope, only more so, turned out to be incorrect, that you keep bashing him to convince people you were actually right at the time. Well, honestly, I don't think that he would be just like the last Pope was my thing. I'd have to go back and listen, but I believe that was Mike's, that was Mike. Obviously somebody on the show, but, and that was definitely something that was said here. I know that much, but I'm not gonna, I don't think I believed it at the time, and I don't think I believe it now, but, so I'm not gonna defend it.
Yeah, you know, I assumed that he would be very similar to the previous pope because all of the popes beforehand were very similar to that.
Right.
So it's not so much just like an assumption, but, you know, a best guess based on evidence. And this guy, I mean, he's not as horrible, but he's still like denouncing the use of condoms, and he's still not prosecuting the pedophile priests. Like, let's once he starts actually doing something rather than talking about something, then maybe I'll change my opinion.
There's been a couple of things that he's done stuff about. Unfortunately, I don't have it in front of me.
Well, the environment thing.
The environmental thing.
I am all for that. That's right. Great. I still want to see him take some action against the pedophile priests. Like, yeah. That's a big thing for me. I cannot let that go until something is done.
Yeah, yeah.
So, this is interesting, though, because it comes from James in Chandler, Arizona, who is known to us at Ask an Atheist as someone who interacts with us and occasionally writes in. And James is an atheist. And what it shows in both our studio room right here is that there's a plurality of opinions amongst atheists and amongst atheist listeners. If a former, you know, host on Ask an Atheist said, no, I think he's going to be exactly the same, but Sam didn't say that, that's two differing opinions amongst atheists.
Which if is James, precisely what I'm trying to do on the show, mm-hmm. I should add.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think that with any kind of leadership, if you say, you know, he could be praised for saving 50, but we criticize him for not saving 51, there is a place for that. There is a place to celebrate steps forward, but also hold people accountable for the things yet to be done. And when we have things, as I said, like the abuse of children, Bridget, you referenced that, when we have medical decisions being made by a bunch of non-medical professionals, a bishop's conference in the United States, governing what medical care you can get, when we have things like the spread of HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases, you know, going rampant in a place that could be controlled by the use of condoms.
Yeah. Well,
can hold him accountable, can't we?
What it comes down to me is I get emails like this. I get emails saying, you know, you guys don't go after the Pope enough because blah, 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 for, well, usually the reasons that we're explicitly stating here. When you get both of those, when you get both sides of that, and you get these, and I know he's written, this guy's written to the show before, but that when you open up with a cheap shot like that, I'm not going to be nice to you. You know, it's not sticking in my craw, but I'm not going to pretend you're on my side.
Well, I think that's the nice thing about being an atheist is that you don't have some higher power like the Pope telling you what to say and what to think, that you can have differing right. opinions and you don't have to justify them at all. It's like, no, I don't have to follow a 2,000-year-old text to tell me what to think. So you do get these divisive points.
Well, what it comes down to me is I never thought he was Hitler, nor do I think he's Space Jesus. Much like most human beings, he's somewhere in the middle. He's a human being. He's fallible. But the fact of the matter is he is the head of the church. He is the Holy Father. He is the Bishop of Rome. That is his job. He's the guy who's in charge. Maybe he can't change everything right away. But if we're not supposed to hold the Pope accountable, the monarch of a nation accountable for its actions, precisely whom do we hold accountable? Who do we talk about? Because the fact that HIV is an epidemic is something that can be laid at the door, as we've pointed out several times, of the Vatican. The fact that you know, we're fighting this fight about the usage of bathrooms, but people are more scared to sometimes go into a church. That is also a thing that can be laid at the floor of the Vatican. If we can't hold this guy accountable, who do we hold accountable?
Good point.
And as far as I'm concerned, that part of the narrative isn't going to change. But I don't think he's evil. I don't think I've ever gone on the record saying he was evil. That was usually not my bag.
Well, have we bashed the Pope enough, or is there any more bashing to be done?
I don't think I've bashed James enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a cheap email, James.
We expect better.
I'm going to try and dig into him to see if he responds. Is he what I'm doing here? It's a little bit like Pong, except that instead of a little square white ball that goes bloop, 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 it's done with hate. Just kidding. The University of Miami has established a chair for the study of atheism, humanism, and secular ethics. The move comes at a time when President Julio Frank is busy establishing 100 new academic chairs in the variety of departments. Retired businessman Louis J. Apagnani, now a philanthropist dedicated to atheist and humanist causes, donated $2.2 million to fund the chair. His goal is to eliminate discrimination against atheists and to make atheism legitimate. Provost Thomas LeBlanc explained that including atheism in the position's title was somewhat controversial, since the word could suggest an advocacy position to outsiders. An initial effort to change the atheism to philosophical naturalism was rejected, and the addition of humanism and secular ethics was added as an appeasement. I know this guy, right?
He founded the Barbizon Colleges, right?
Yeah. He founded the Apagnani Legal Institute AHA. I love this one. You know, we have things like Scripps College that has a major in secular studies, but nothing has had something called atheism. We have a professor, an endowed chair of Islamic studies, and an endowed chair of Judaic studies. But to say that we have an endowed chair of atheism studies, of the studies of atheism, somehow means that the university or the Department of World Religions and Philosophy is somehow pushing an advocacy position in favor of atheism. And that internally, the department and the university had this debate, saying, well, we have our Islamic studies chair, we have our Judaic studies chair, we have our Christian theology chair, but really, I don't think that we should have the big A word on a university position, because people might think that we're trying to be an atheist university. Is so emblematic of exactly what Mr. Apagnani is trying to eliminate. To eliminate this misunderstanding about atheists, trying to eliminate this discrimination towards atheism as just a regular world philosophy that exists. And so to say, maybe we shouldn't use that word and say, well, let's have naturalist philosophy as something more convoluted and less hot button and less attracting of attention. It's just it's a little bit disappointing. I'm glad that they pushed forward, though.
Well, is it really disappointing when it's the first one ever? I mean, this is terra incognita here. So that's Latin, by the way.
Good job, Sam.
It's the first one that mentions atheism, but it's not the first university in the United States even to have a position or a major that looks at secularist studies.
Yeah.
But it's the first one to actually use the word.
Right.
So,
I mean, you've got the MDiv that you were talking about. But this is the first one that's like with the studies thing on the end. This is new territory, so I can see why it would be a little hot for some people. I don't really see the adding what was the other thing? Humanism and secular ethics on it. I don't think it's that terrible.
No.
I don't think it's terrible.
I think it's...
That's not the terrible part of it.
It's a good compromise.
Yeah, I think it's precisely the thing being studied. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And going to the break, and we come back, probably continue talking about education. Or maybe cartoons. I don't know. Either way.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com. I wanna bring it back, but it's more than basic.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. So when we went into the break, we were talking about this new chair of atheism, skepticism, and the separation. No, sorry. atheism, humanism, and secular ethics at the University of Miami. So one of the questions I have is there's a lot of liberal arts degrees that have studies in the word or at the end of the name of the degree, women's studies, African-American studies, things like that. I don't know what studies means in this case. I mean, just learning what's going on in that particular division of humanity. Is it really just as broad as that?
Yeah, it's sort of a general term. So like part of my degree is in deaf studies.
Okay.
And that sort of breaks down into the linguistic breakdown of American Sign Language. It breaks down into like deaf culture, audiology, diseases of the ear, like all of these other like little things that go into it. But you can sort of say that it's like sort of an umbrella term of all of the different things that you would study in something like that.
I would agree with that assessment. My undergrad is in Spanish Arts and Letters, and under that I took a lot of classes in the Latin American Studies departments. And we did literature, we had cultural revolutions, we had film, and history. And we know that there is a rich history of freethinkers in the United States and of Enlightenment thinkers in Europe. We know that there's current social movements that can be looked at and analyzed and studied. And looking at cultures in contact, so people in religious families and non-religious families coming into contact with one another. And I would imagine that some of the things would mirror the coursework and the courses that are in other departments that have that studies tag at the end of it.
Yeah.
Even within the religion department, what does the Judaic Studies department look like? What is the American Christian Theology Studies department look like?
Okay, it may have sounded like it, but it wasn't a challenge. It's just literally a situation where I know what people who have studies degrees do, but not always does the degree and what you do after university match. So I wanted to make sure I got it right.
And yeah. I think you're not wrong to be asking that, not as a challenge, but as curiosity.
I've heard that, ooh, studies degree, what does that mean? That's not where I'm going
but
from here. I actually want to know.
I think that you're right to ask it, Sam, because it's something that, like you said, is terra incognita. It's fairly new.
Yeah.
And so looking at how other studies majors have started out their lives in academia, I think would be a good forecast as to how this might go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love this sort of thing. I do like it when people get degrees like this, but I'm an engineer. I work with things all right, I'll be honest with you. I'm just going to come clean. This sounds really cool. I think I might want to do it.
Totes. I'm right there with you.
But I don't know what I would do with such a degree, I guess is the question I've got.
I think you could do a lot of what you're doing now, but make money at it.
How?
A lot of people put a lot of stock into that piece of paper that comes with a degree. And so if you can say, like, I got my PhD in atheism.
Yeah.
Then you've got your radio show. You're going to get, like, a different variety of advertisements. You're going to have people, sort of put more faith, quote unquote, into what you're capable of doing. with that piece of paper.
Another reason I think that something like this would be important is not necessarily for the degree that someone might earn as a major within this particular division of the Department of Philosophy, but for students that take elective courses within that particular area to expand their understanding of what it means to be a non-religious human being in America. I mean, I could see a huge place for social workers to be able to take a course like this, for teachers to be able to take an elective course. So not just for the major itself, and not for just the
okay, but
degree.
I want to come back to the major, because this is, like I said, now you're taking it away from my selfishness, and I want to bring it back to my selfishness. I mean, I can talk about the stuff that isn't, you know, about making a living, which is a concept that I deal with in a lot of organizations that I work with, both professionally and not, which is institutional memory, which is what do we know about the context we exist in? And it seems like this kind of degree would be good for the atheist community because it would give us a wider sense of context of where, you know, where we came from, where we got here, and the fights that were required. Like, a lot of people seem to think that the atheism movement equals what the press calls the new atheism movement, when honestly, there's been discussions about atheism going on for as long as there have been discussions about religion. And a wider understanding of that context, I think, would definitely be useful for the community. And the best way to do that, I think, would be probably through a degree.
Absolutely. It was one thing when I was getting my degree, things that I'd already known, but knowing how to phrase it better mm-hmm. in a way that is more understandable and breaking it down into usable concepts is definitely helpful. And sort of having that continuity in your dialogue and having those terminologies used appropriately that you wouldn't necessarily know without having that sort of classroom textbook knowledge base.
Yeah. So the cultural translator thing is actually the pivot point on this. It's both the how you make a living and the point of the degree.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm all about degrees where the point of the degree and how you make a living are separate. I mean, I'm totally into that. People think I'm not, but I am.
So I had a question when looking at this, and it was, why Miami? Why the University of Miami? And I did a little bit of research into this. Do you guys have any idea about why Miami? Why Florida? Why that corner of the country? Because we tend to think of Florida as some place that has a lot of, you know, religious folks in it.
It's nice.
It's nice.
Yeah. Well, didn't the person with this endowment graduate from University of Miami?
He is a Floridian and he is retired in Florida right now.
Okay.
Here's the other thing. We tend to think of most of American cities, major cities, as having and regions of the U.S. as having a very, very big evangelical Protestant, you know, born again identified Christian population. There is a larger Jewish population in Miami at 6% than there is of the evangelical Protestant.
Well, isn't that sort of the punchline to the joke that everybody in New York retires to Miami?
Yeah. There is that punchline of that joke, yeah. So there's a very big Jewish population, but really what Miami is known for is being overwhelmingly Catholic in terms of compared to other cities. They're at about 30.
Catholic. Uh-oh, we're back at Catholics again, everybody.
We are back at Catholic. And, you know, we're at about 30% Catholic and in Miami. So it is a little bit interesting, but also Miami, as far as cities goes, ranks up there in some studies as the 12th most godless city in the United States.
Oh, nice.
That ranking 12th as a city or a metropolitan region as people not affiliated with any religion.
Well, we know tons of people in Florida who are really active in the community. I mean,
Central Florida Free Thought Association, led by David Williamson, has done some amazing activism and brought some really great attention to the separation of church and state.
Absolutely. There's good work going on down there. Okay, and it's time for me to, I think, come clean. Becky remembers names. I remember faces. Together, we're almost a competent human being. but you know something. You were saying in the break, you know something that is absolutely awesome about this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have a hard time pronouncing his name. Apignani. When they were debating whether or not they should use the word atheist in the title, or atheism in the title, and they're like, well, let's use natural studies or whatever. He was like, nope. Nope. If you want to do that, you're going to lose the funding. And so it was one of those, like, it was part of the endowment was that they had to use the word atheist in the title.
And universities don't say no to money.
Yep.
I love you. That's pretty great. I got to admit.
Yes.
It's a good way to pull your weight.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the cause of basically pluralistic understanding. It's huge.
Yeah, I think we need more of this. You know, I've gone back and forth about doing that thing at Harvard and becoming a, what do you call it?
Gaining a master's in divinity with
a
focus in humanism.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Being a secular celebrant, a degreed humanistic clergy member.
I kind of love the idea because I think because of the interface between, you know, atheists and what they believe, you have to dive into sociology, you have to dive into psychology, you have to dive into, you know, historical mythology. You also have to talk about physics, and you also have to talk about math, and you also have to talk about statistics and science and chemistry and ecology. And it's like to be able to eloquently speak on subjects that matter to atheism, it's almost like a degree in a little bit of everything, which has always kind of appealed to me. I think it's been described as a pack rat mind a little bit. I just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then putting it inside of a context that actually serves a community, which has always kind of appealed to me, if you haven't figured that out. Yeah, I like this idea. It sounds cool. Data analysts at the publication Priceonomics, who evaluated reviews left by users of the website Goodreads, found that the complete collection of Calvin and Hobbes topped the ratings, edging out the ESV Study Bible for the number one spot. Only books with more than 2,000 ratings were evaluated. Over 27,000 users had rated Calvin and Hobbes, with more than 80% of reviewers having given it 5 stars. In fact, 5 out of the top 10 were Watterson-related titles, and 3 were religious texts. The Argentinian comic Mafalda and the Harry Potter box set also ranked in the top 10.
So we have a lot of someone talking to an imaginary friend going on in the top 10 books. An imaginary magic friend, invisibility, magic powers, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. You know, when Becky, when you told me this for the first time, like, I was a little overwhelmed with the feeling of it, because Calvin and Hobbes has always sort of spoken to me, like, from my childhood, just like the imaginary friend, your stuffed animal that goes everywhere with you. Like, I was always that kid that had something with me that I would, you know, have these conversations with, and so it sort of hit me in all of the little feely places, because it was just like, yay, it's the best, because it really is.
Well, and rereading Calvin and Hobbes as an adult both has an element of nostalgia for being a child, but also has some amazingly wonderful, pithy, and deep realizations about the world, about challenging authority, about being slightly counterculture, about creativity, about curiosity. And for to compare that to what's in biblical scripture or in the missionary texts that are, you know, that are in the top 10 here is such a dichotomy. I mean, to look at curiosity, no obedience. To look at counterculture, no obedience. And you know, saying, honoring your elders. There's a lot of irreverence and dishonoring of the elders that is present in Calvin and Hobbes. But at the same time, you have the elders in Calvin and Hobbes that don't give up on the child. You know, don't try and stone the unruly child. I mean, maybe a few snowballs here and there thrown at him.
I think I'm about to really... It's going to be pickles on parade here a little bit. Never read Calvin and Hobbes.
What?
So never read them, but also you're not hating on Calvin and Hobbes.
No. There's a blank spot there.
Oh.
I have no opinion.
You should read them. They're very, very good.
I probably should. Yeah. And I doubt... And it doesn't look as daunting as the Harry Potter books. I'll put it there.
But those are also very, very good.
Yeah. I suppose. But I think this, my childhood was a little on the non-standard side. Did a lot of people read Calvin and Hobbes via books or the newspaper? Because I always thought it was a newspaper comic.
I had them in collections of books.
Okay.
Yeah. We used to get them in the Sunday Boston Globe when I was growing up, and my little brother, who's about three years younger than I, would cut out his favorite ones, and he would tape them and pin them to the big bulletin board in one of the family rooms.
Yeah.
So when Calvin and Hobbes stopped being published in the Boston Globe, I mean, he cut out the very last one and laminated it, and it's up there. And I believe he still has it. He, at 30 years old, still has the Calvin and Hobbes, you know, final one. I mean, it was definitely something that you could read serially, but then also, you know, it's probably the most popular thing checked out of the elementary school library.
Okay.
I mean, it's coffee table books at your pediatric dentist's office. So I think that we got it in all forms. I do know my favorite fun fact about Calvin and Hobbes. I believe that Bill Watterson was the first person to use the word booger in print in the Boston Globe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's awesome.
Something the Bible has nothing on.
not a lot of newspapers in my childhood. So, yeah, I guess I will have to check out the world's most popular book, more popular than Jesus. You think it would be the Beatles, but no. It's Calvin and Hobbes. And I think that's a good thing, personally.
Yeah. I think also the thing about the Calvin and Hobbes is that a lot of the concepts that they tackle are very humanist in nature. It's about being kind to each other. It's about, you know, not necessarily following the rules and like that's...
Well, it is called Calvin and Hobbes.
That's irony, Sam. That's what we call irony.
Yeah, okay. No, that's the thing, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think that's a joke you're going to get when you're a kid. I certainly wouldn't have.
No.
No, I think it was 11th grade European studies, European history class in, you know, first semester. That's what Calvinism is? That's who Hobbes is? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I will have to read them, I think.
Yeah, good.
And I do know a number of people who talk about how they've derived their morality from stuff they've learned from Calvin and Hobbes. You know, not like the totality of the morality, but like they get the idea of the sense of being nice to people and things like that from reading Calvin and Hobbes at an early age.
Yep.
And frankly, from the people I have met who espouse that, I hold the comics in high regard, even if I haven't read them myself. I'll just put it that way. Maybe that's something we can talk about. Maybe there's a show there, I guess.
We'll have our daily scriptural reading, our lessons from the scripture of Calvin and Hobbes.
You know,
that sounds like a good segment.
What humanistic values espoused this week from Calvin and Hobbes?
Yep.
You got a bookcase full of all these awesome kind of books, but yeah, Sam, really missing is the complete Watterson set.
Shall we continue with cartoons?
Let's continue with cartoons.
Yeah.
All right. An art exhibition of cartoons and caricatures mocking the Holocaust opened in Tehran last month, causing widespread condemnation from organizations and foreign governments, including Germany, the U.S., and UNESCO. Artists from around the world vied for $50,000 in prize money. A spokesperson from the U.S. State Department said that such offensive speech should be condemned by the authorities and civil society leaders rather than encouraged. Masoud Shojay Tabatabe of Iran's Al-Alam TV contended that the exhibition constituted opposition to the massacres perpetrated against the Palestinian people and was also a response to the Charlie Hebdo publications, which were an affront to the Prophet Muhammad.
Sam, this is not the same kind of cartoons. I'm terribly disappointed.
But they are cartoons.
Such a downer.
I guess my first comment is good for the goose, good for the gander.
I kind of was wondering what you would think of this one, because we have the U.S. State Department saying these should be condemned by everyone, yet a country that espouses free speech and free publication and free expression is saying, except for the ones that are mocking the Holocaust.
Well, I think it's okay to condemn it and say, hey, that's crap, but that's not the same thing as, say, censoring it.
Yeah, they're not banning it, but they're just saying, this is maybe in poor taste. My first thought was, why? Like, what's the point in it? Like,
well, draw Muhammad has become a thing, and like, oh, we must get revenge. Yeah, and that's that. However, in the case of Charlie Hebdo, I'm pretty sure revenge has already been obtained. And that's where this gets kind of cold for me. Just frozen. Not good. Not the cartoon. Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, go on.
No, it's... you know, if this was the sole response by people was just, oh, you know, we'll come up with our own really offensive cartoons. Oh, yeah. Okay. Then it would be good for the, you know, it was just, you know, this is, if we can do it, you can do it too.
So Charlie Hebdo draws and caricaturizes Muslims offensively and draws the Prophet. And therefore, someone in Iran or some bunches of non-governmental art organizations say, we're going to draw, you know, offensive pictures of Jews in the Holocaust. Ha,
yeah.
Ha, ha. And if it was just a war of pens and pencils and art brushes, that would be one thing.
That would be one thing. But the message here isn't, well, we can do it too. Free expression means free expression for everybody. I mean, that's something I stand by. That's something I hold to. I'm still going to call you a jerk when you're being a jerk. And I'll happily call people, you know, the government of Iran a jerk. I think I've called them that and worse in my time. But I think the big message here, the big important thing here is that Charlie Hebdo drew some comics that offended people. And they got murdered because of it. People are going to participate in this contest. One of them is going to get $50,000. Do you think anyone's going to get murdered because of it?
In Iran, for this particular action, I would doubt it.
And anybody get murdered, full stop?
Probably not. No.
I think that's the message.
The other strange thing is that the lengths to which the Iranian government is trying to say, oh, no, 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 these are non-government-sponsored, non-governmental organizations that are doing this. And yet we're saying these are clearly organizations that are upheld and supported and lauded by the government. At what point can you really plausibly deny that you have any kind of sponsorship or encouragement of this particular action?
But we're talking about Iran, where underground jazz clubs are prosecuted and hate comics are lauded. So to say that this is not a government thing, I think totally undermines or totally ignores the fact that all media is approved or unapproved in Iran right now.
I would agree at that. You had the case of some college students that were making their own music video to Pharrell's Happy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And get prosecuted, get arrested for un-Islamic activities and being offensive and men and women dancing together and then glorifying that through YouTube and through social media.
And that's a crime.
Yet drawing, I mean, and I don't think that either drawing an offensive picture of Jews perishing in the Holocaust or making a music video to Happy, I don't think either of those are crimes. I think one of them is more deplorable and
right.
Kind of disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, one of them should be decried, but that doesn't mean they're not allowed to do it. I mean, that's kind of the situation we're in when we talk about free speech. And honestly, I've seen it go now in the tenure of Ask an Atheist. We've seen what happens with unencumbered free speech, as rare as it is, even in the United States. And we see what happens with curtailed speech. And honestly, unencumbered speech seems a lot safer to me.
Yeah.
People seem to be harmed less.
It's seeming to be that way, even as offensive as it may be to unencumbered express your disgust with Muslim people in front of a mosque in the United States. We don't have either the people in the mosque or the protesters being persecuted and harmed.
Well, harmed. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about politics and Jimmy Raskin, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, cool.
Hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee.
WNEX Radio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Now, a few weeks ago, we did an episode about a guy in, where is it?
Maryland? Virginia.
Maryland?
Maryland. Yes, Maryland.
Yeah.
Congressional candidate Jamie Raskin in Maryland.
Right. And that episode ended up being a little bit on the...
contentious side?
Contentious side. And it was kind of murder getting it done. And but we got some feedback on it, and we should probably talk about it. This is Jacob from Facebook, who writes, I've listened to the spirited debate about congressional candidate Jamie Raskin, who took secular money but won't wear the big A on his chest. I agree with Sam that it was a lousy move on his part, but I'm also aware of how we need all the allies we can get, and it's unproductive to get into a circular firing squad over this. Yeah, the guy is a weasel, but all politicians are weasels, and we need some weasels who are basically on our side.
What we're talking about here is the... American Humanist Association's politically active arm giving money towards Raskin's primary campaign to the tune of about $10,000. He won his primary campaign, and then another $10,000, again, the maximum for each of the elections, towards his main congressional campaign. And the American Humanist Association director, Roy Speckhart, advertising that this would be the first atheist in office, or the first non-theist in office.
He didn't say atheist. He said non-theist.
Non-theist. And a few other places said, hey, there could be a new atheist in Congress. Whereas Raskin himself, who's always been a really staunch proponent for the separation of church and state, really good on social issues that other folks, other religious folks might want to curtail, you know, he said, well, I've never identified as a non-theist. I've never said I was a non-theist. I do identify with humanism, but small h, you know, like the Enlightenment thinkers and things like that. So a lot of people were really kind of burned about him backing away from this big A. As,
I among them.
As Jacob said.
Yeah. So have you heard about this, Bridget?
Very little about it, but, you know, we all have reasons for not using the atheist label
right.
in various situations. I have since, you know, a long time ago, I decided it's like, no, I'm going to use that word.
Right.
But there was a time when I didn't. I would use every other word except for the atheist word. Like,
were you a naturalistic philosopher?
Something like that, yeah. Probably my college days. But we all have reasons. And I get it. However, it's really important if you're in a position where you can be openly atheist that you should be.
Right.
And so if you're taking money from an atheist group and it's very public that you're taking this money, what is stopping you? Like, what is that block from using the word?
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. I've never talked to the guy. I don't know him. I've never had this conversation. But it seems sort of sketchy to me. Like, why would you publicly take money, but then still not use the term?
Well, I think at this point, when you make it general about politicians being weasels, the fact of the matter is politicians are weasels because more often than not, we let them.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. And there is no political party, there's no political caucus other than the ones we start that would feel uncomfortable throwing us under the bus for a cheap Christian vote. The Democrats are not on our side. The Republicans are not on their side. Hell, the Greens aren't even on our side. There's no... Certainly the Constitution Party is not on our side. Maybe the libertarians, but I've seen libertarians, libertarian politicians do precisely that. Say, you know, I don't care about the atheists. I want the Christian vote because they see it as a bigger block because, well, they can read numbers. But the whole point of a social visibility movement is to be visible. And when you're taking money from secular humanists and including a little bit of my money, it would, I think, if we don't complain about it, it'll just verify that this is a safe thing to do.
Exactly.
I would like allies, but I would like allies that don't throw us under the bus at the first opportunity. If he's willing to throw us under the bus this early in the process, I challenge that he'd really be a good ally for us. And I want to work with the thing is it got strident. I think the conversation a couple weeks ago got strident because I had two people telling me to, you know,
to quit the circular firing squad.
To quit.
Right?
It's not a circular firing squad.
Right, right.
Holy cats.
In Jacob's words, it's not worth getting into a firing squad here. And I think that you're right, Sam. It's not a circular firing squad because we're not ending up shooting each other. We aren't here in this case.
Yeah.
We're trying all to raise the floor for those of us who want to be Americans, just like this congressional candidate, just like those of us that want to be recognized and practice our non-belief, right? Or, you know, unencumbered.
What really got on my pecs, and the thing that you actually quoted with the bits of white noise, because Becky actually edited that episode.
Oh, I told you to get over it, Sam?
Yeah, is that you were both telling me not to care about this. And at that point, you're asking me to not care about the thing by which I have defined myself. And now, at that point, it becomes a little bit more personal. And it's like, okay, you guys got to back off.
And upon reflection, when I say, you know what, maybe it's not for everyone to care about it so stridently, but it is for someone. There must be someone caring about it stridently, or else those issues go unheard. You say that, you know, we're still an easy target to be thrown under the bus because in exchange for a cheap Christian vote because, well, people can read the numbers. Well, we need to be able to portray our numbers as they actually are.
More accurately than they are perceived. I mean,
yes.
I say they can read the numbers. There are more Christians than atheists in America. But, I mean, if you look at the up-and-coming numbers, if you look at that really vaunted 18 to 35 vote set and the kind of people who are moving into it, throwing atheists away, or throwing non-theists away, isn't going to do you any good for much longer.
No.
And even those who aren't atheist in that particular group, the none, I don't have a religion, are generally and seem to be people that don't want other people's religious values being foisted upon them. And so even if you don't say you in this particular voting bloc are atheists, or you in your campaign strategies, you don't say that they're atheist voters, you have to recognize that this is a group of voters that won't want you saying all this God stuff in your political execution of your job.
Right. Just don't take the money.
Yeah.
It may only be $20,000, but that's just, you know, that's just continuing this idea that politics is only about money and that you shouldn't care when your little amount of money goes to somebody who's basically throwing you under the bus. And it's like, is it about ideas or is it about money? If it's about money, then he shouldn't really worry about this 20 grand and go after bigger fish and leave us alone. If it's about ideology, if it's about getting politicians in our government who will stand by us, they should actually stand by us.
Right. I'd love to have him on the show.
I would too.
I want to pick his brain. I want to know what his thought process was.
And to be honest, I totally hear we need politicians on our side. We absolutely do. Mm-hmm. This is a thing in my head that I would like solved. You know what I mean? And not that I'm going to be able to vote for that guy. He's on the other side of the freaking country. But
well, closer to this side of the country, we do have Steve Hill running in California.
Yes.
Who just straight out says, yes, I associate and am a member of the Satanic Church. Yes, I am an atheist.
And that's the coolest thing ever.
I mean, unabashedly just stating it. And we've met Steve Hill, actually, when he was up here.
I interviewed him in 2014. It was me, Steve Hill, and Ian Harris in a room talking about a documentary we just watched about the intersection between the African-American community and Christianity. And it was a really, I mean, because it was the social control aspects of it or something that were always very important to me. And I was like really moved by this documentary. And then it's Ian Harris, who's fun to talk to. And Steve Hill is fantastic. And it was like this really great interview. And then I lost it in a disc crash.
No.
We'll just have to make good on that. I think that we'll be probably talking, hopefully, to Jamie Raskin and Steve Hill in the election cycle.
I would not be surprised if Jamie Raskin told me to go away.
To take a hike?
Crawl
under a bus?
I'm being polite. I'll be honest with you. I because of the nature of this conversation, I would not call my portrayal of the guy particularly kind. And I'm aware of that. And
I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe there is a very good reason why he's not using the word.
Right. He's worried about getting elected. That's a fairly good reason when you're trying to get elected.
But even then, like you're taking the money. It's still public that you're associated with this group. But maybe it's a family thing. I just want to pick his brain.
Okay.
Maybe.
If it ends up being a family thing or something like that, it's not something I'm going to be comfortable with, but at least it provides some, like,
right,
sane concept.
Maybe he'll show up at the Reason Rally in D.C. here pretty soon. Or would have already passed, I guess. But
when is the Reason Rally?
The Reason Rally is June 4th.
Okay, yeah. This is going to be well after the Reason Rally.
But I'll let you know.
Okay, yeah, it's going to be about 2 weeks after.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, how was the Reason Rally? Becky, what's it like being out of school? Sam, what's it like being on Venus?
Why are you going to Venus? Or why did you go to Venus?
Time travel.
This is just hopefulness. Well, I mean, on a spaceship, I just wouldn't like, hey, I'm in my slippers on Venus.
Oh,
that would go poorly.
Yes.
that would go very poorly.
So, you know, people have gotten some feelings about this Jamie Raskin fight that we've had on air. And I think, like I said, upon further reflection, it really isn't a firing squad like was maybe portrayed by us.
Yeah.
But there was a fair amount of ganging up on you, Sam.
I will say that, you know, people think I fell in the same hole that the Washington Post did. And I think maybe on some level in certain circumstances I did, because I think if you listen to the episode, you will hear, as you guys present me with information, my position shifting. I've not stayed in the same place during the entirety of this debate. I'm not one of those guys who thinks strength is not moving. But I do think there's a there. Like, I do think there's an actual concern. And which is, I guess, why we're still talking about it.
So what we want to see is more atheists running for political positions and saying, yes, I'm an atheist, and what of it?
Well, speaking of atheist politicians, I think there's a even more local atheist politician who we haven't actually talked about on the show very much yet.
Yes, we have got a Democratic candidate for 9th Legislative District for the state representative position 1 in Washington State, Jennifer Goulet. And what's really cool about this is that she's a different kind of candidate that has been run in a very long time. She's out in Tri-Cities area. That's Kennewick, Richland, and Pasco. And her opponent actually is known to us on the show as she who has... I can't recall her name at the moment, but she was out in Olympia during the Teen Planned Parenthood Lobby Day Bridget, are you familiar with this one?
Yeah, I was on the show for that one.
It was awesome. We had a candidate that said, oh, you girls should be ashamed of yourselves for lobbying for these kinds of things. Are you even virgins? Someone, her candidate,
wait,
she is running against the person who questioned minor children about their sexual history.
I didn't.
That's awesome.
I didn't know that that was the person she was running against. Oh, boy. That's...
Yes. So for advocating for teen health clinics and comprehensive health education, you get scolded by your representative for possibly not being a virgin. You could go with her, or you could go with atheist candidate Jennifer Goulet.
Yay.
I think that's a fairly straightforward one. I mean, even when you take the identity thing out of it, is the fact that you've got someone who's running against somebody who says who asks teenagers if they're virgins. That's creepy. That's not what you want in politics.
Go with the uncreepy. We are atheists. We are not creepy.
Yeah. Hey, you can give us a call at 844-753-7842. Go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Thank you, Bridget.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah. Email us questions at askanatheist.tv. Askanatheistwa is our Twitter. See you guys next week.